You're listening to the Resilient Fertility Podcast, a space where we explore the intersection of food and culture on the journey to motherhood. I'm Anissa Woodall, a holistic certified nutritionist and mother of two adventurous boys. Join me as I guide you on how to reconnect with your innate wisdom, develop a growth mindset, and harness the power of food and habit to embody the mother your child needs you to be. Whether you're planning to become a mother, trying to conceive, or are already a mother, you'll find valuable insights and practical tips to enhance your fertility and optimize your pregnancy. Tune in every other week for thoughtful and informative conversations about the power in your hands on your journey to motherhood. Welcome to another episode of the Resilient Fertility Podcast. Today, I'm excited to share with you an interview that I'm doing with one of my Resilient Motherhood course participants. Catherine's story is a beautiful example of resilient fertility and embracing the growth mindset on the motherhood journey. In this episode, she shares her story about her challenging conception and pregnancy journeys with her first child and how they motivated her to take preconception preparation up a notch for her second baby. She shares her experience of medical sabotage with her first pregnancy that led to an induction and resulting C-section, and why she's choosing to do a wild pregnancy and sovereign birth the second go around. We get into what kinds of lifestyle changes made the biggest impact for Catherine's fertility this time around, what she loved most about resilient motherhood, and how she was shocked that she was able to conceive on the first go, especially after her first conception journey. In this episode, you'll learn about the importance of deepening your knowledge and leaning on wisdom from women who have walked this path before you. We are hoping that you'll feel inspired from her story to take action, whether you are already trying to conceive or you want to have your ideal motherhood experience the first time without going through all the trial and error. Catherine is a mom to a sweet toddler boy with another baby on the way, a wife to a wonderful Swedish man she met at the height of 2020, and a co-host and co-founder of Moms Off the Record podcast. Although Catherine is currently a proud Floridian resident, her roots are in New York and she has lived in five other states. Catherine and April began Moms Off the Record podcast as a passion project during their respective postpartum journeys. Since then, the podcast has taken off in the crunchy mom sphere as they continue to expose industries and dispel myths that undermine mothers while inspiring women to think critically about everything from pregnancy to motherhood. So today, I'm really excited to be sharing her with you, and let's get to it.
Welcome, Kat. Thank you so much for being here on the Resilient Fertility Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I know it's been a long time coming, and I'm just so excited to share my success story with your listeners. And yes, you, of course.
Yes, I'm excited to hear from your perspective where things are at now for those who are new to both my podcast as well as to Kat. I'd love if you could just share a little bit about kind of yourself, where you're coming from, how you found me, and what your overall goals were in wanting to work with me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a former kind of, I hate this term, but boss babe, like career climbing woman. Yeah, career ladder climbing. And I was in the kind of the corporate world for about 8 years. And that was a big part of my life, the grind, you could say, which really in hindsight is not very conducive to improving fertility hormones and tapping into my more feminine side. And it really felt intuitive to me. And I realized how lucky I am to be able to do this. But just to step back from the hamster wheel and corporate altogether when I became a mom. And so that's what I did. And I've been focusing on motherhood full time. I now have an almost 2-year-old and I have a baby that's coming along the way just in a few months from now. So in the second trimester. And in addition to being a mom and a wife over here in Southwest Florida, I also co-host and co-founded the podcast Moms Off the Record, where my bestie April and I, we tackle philosophies and practices that impact moms and babies all the way from preconception and pregnancy to motherhood. So we talk about a lot of things that most moms are that they consider too taboo to discuss with their pediatrician or with other moms at the playground, but we tackle them fearlessly. We like to do deep dives, and we had you on the podcast, which was so awesome. So that's really what we're up to over here, but otherwise living the simple life, love to travel, have a wonderful husband from Sweden. We met in 2020, thanks to the apps, and the rest is history.
Wow. I didn't know it was so recent.
Yeah. Feels like a lifetime, but so recent.
Yeah. And so you were finding me through going through your own conception journey previously, and then had your first child. And then tell us a little bit about what your conception journey was like with your first child, your pregnancy, and what led you to then wanting to do things differently the next time.
Yes, thank you. I definitely got a little bit sidetracked with my backstory. I didn't even get to address how we met, which was honestly thanks to Instagram. We crossed paths. And your content, your reels resonate with me so much because it's all too often that women are exposed to, I like to call it mainstream dietetics and nutrition advice, which really is, if you listeners out there have come across Moms Off the Record, you know that we are anything but routine practices and mainstream advice. So I so admired how you went against the grain with that, and also just very results driven and pro motherhood. It was really refreshing to see. That immediately resonated with me. You immediately piqued my interest. And knowing that we wanted to expand our family, I wasn't sure exactly when, but just in the near future, I'd love to ideally have 3 kids. Number 2 is on the mind. I was like, let me see what this resilient motherhood program is all about. And I think what was so cool is so often when we're dipping our toe in the water of what can we do as women to improve our fertility, oftentimes we're given just the superficial advice like you got to eat better and work out. And it's really just not enough in our modern day toxic world and society that's really fast paced. What I really appreciate about you and your program is you take it many layers deeper, and it's truly holistic in every sense of the word. Speaking of, I think you asked about what was my prior TTC experience like and how does it compare to this one? Is that right?
Yeah. And I think also just what was that primary driver in wanting to do things differently?
Yeah. So primary driver was mainly, it boils down to, I was really surprised the first time I was trying to get pregnant, which was it started in the spring of 2021. So I was, how old was I? I can do basic math, I promise. It was almost 30 and a half. And I totally figured, just like many women in their 20s and 30s assume, that of course, if you have unprotected sex in your fertile period, you're just going to get pregnant. I didn't have any health issues that I was aware of. I didn't have any weird symptoms. The only time I was ever on hormonal birth control, the pill was just for 1 year. And it was when I was 20 to 21 years old. So we're talking a decade prior. That was it. Never had an IUD. What inspired me to work with you was not wanting to go through the stress and grief and heartache of trying so hard for a certain outcome and thinking you're doing everything right. And you can't pinpoint why it is that it's taking you 6 months or 7 cycles, which is how long it took the first time, to get pregnant. It's exhausting. It almost becomes like a full-time job you take on in addition to your job of getting down to the answers. And you end up reaching out to so many different specialists, and you just get more confusing answers that are conflicting with other information other specialists are giving you, right? And so many of the mainstream professionals out there really just want to cover up symptoms instead of getting to the root cause. What inspired me to work with you is knowing, okay, baby 2 is on the horizon. My period had just returned at around 12 months postpartum, but I could tell from my cycles that my hormones weren't really regulated, and also just how I felt. And I knew that I just trusted working with you based on your values, your philosophies, what you stood for, that you would help me get to the bottom line in a timely fashion, which you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the way you're speaking to it being like a full-time job is something that is often unpredictable when people start trying to start their families. And a lot of times people are like, oh, I can just come off the pill and I'll get pregnant. And some people do, not that I would necessarily recommend it, but to think that, okay, there's it could be different, right? Like, it doesn't have to be like a full-time job that you're thinking about it and stressing about it. And so much of that stress can, you know, have like negative effects as well. And so, you know, I love that you are able to look at that experience and say, okay, that's not the norm and that's not what it should be, right? Because I've known some people who have had that experience the first time and then had that same experience the second time because they didn't learn from that experience, right? That's not to place judgment. It's just observation. And I think some people will learn through, I don't know if I would say this is like perhaps a small T trauma. It depends on how you perceive it. But like some people will look at that trauma of like the stress of conceiving or the stress of oftentimes when it comes to birth trauma or like pregnancy experience or things like that. Some people are motivated to find a way beyond it, to like to move through it and achieve resiliency. And other people are just overwhelmed by it. And they really identify with, okay, this is my story. And they almost develop an attachment to that story that sometimes keeps them in that place. And for the people listening, like if you're finding that you're in this place of struggle and you find that you're in some ways attaching to that story of struggle, try to explore, try to expand your mindset and say, okay, what if I started to consider things from a different perspective? What if I started to take more autonomy in my, or take more of my autonomy back in my decisions and my choices? And for you, going into this second experience, what would you say was different?
So much. So I have a little list here to myself so I don't forget anything. But reflecting back on my first experience, just to compare it to this one, there was definitely a lot that I could have and should have done. And that probably honestly would have cut the time in half of how long it took to conceive. For example, in 2021, the first time I was trying to conceive and with my son, basically, I thought it was sufficient to be doing CrossFit 3 to 4 days a week. And I was living in Austin at the time. So I was getting tons of fresh air and sunshine, going on these long walks first thing in the morning. They say that's great. And when we did go out to eat just a couple times a week, I was choosing raw oysters, right? So I was making really conscientious decisions in that realm. But what else was I doing simultaneously? I wasn't willing to give up my social drinking habit, which I've never been a big drinker. I actually hate the feeling of feeling nauseous and drunk, but it was fun to be a little bit buzzed and to have a cocktail or two with food when you're on a date night or out with friends. And so I did continue to have a cocktail or a glass of wine or beer. Austin has a phenomenal food scene, and I wasn't ready to let that go, right? So it's interesting that I wanted a baby so badly, but what are the things I wasn't ready to sacrifice? Sometimes two things can't coexist. And you do have to be willing to make certain sacrifices. Very different this time around. And you and I had a great heart-to-heart. Something I appreciate about your program is the, in addition to the self-paced, self-guided modules, which are so simple to digest and listen to in the car, on my walks, it, like I was alluding to before, just you took me through an even deeper dive than I was even aware of through all the books and research I had done on fertility and preconception. The importance of saying bye to alcohol, even that occasional drink, is crucial in the preconception period. And I really didn't think it would move the needle that much, and I'm convinced it did for me. Giving up alcohol, also another thing I did not do the first time that I did do this time, and I learned from your program, is I totally underestimated the importance of getting a good night's sleep and quality rest. And I'm such a night owl. And I was like, I'm going to do a late night workout because I had dinner out. And now I'm just going to do like a 9 p.m. workout, no biggie. And then I'm going to watch a movie for a couple hours, no big deal. I got to unwind a little bit. And I'll just go to bed at 12:30 and I'll wake up at 6:30. All these little habits obviously add up. And I learned from you, I should have known this before and I didn't, but I learned from you, like, when you're getting fewer than minimum 7 hours of sleep, and I, in a perfect world, I'd get 8 hours, it is decreasing that egg quality. And right, it is going to impact melatonin levels, which are crucial for fertility, and also increase cortisol. And all of these things are so interconnected. So this time around, it was tough because at the time, with no childcare, you're trying to do the mom hustle, juggle a million things at once. I was pulling some late nights, doing some podcasting recordings with April well into midnight, 1 a.m. not managing my time. And I think that in addition to, yeah, just other lifestyle changes, it wasn't conducive. Your program helped me, I would say, just overall dial it in beyond basic nutrition and movement. That is the basic superficial foundation, but went way beyond. Also, I probably was not reaching my minimum daily protein grams that I needed back then. And I definitely am now. I aim for like at least 100 grams per day. And I love having access in Resilient Motherhood to just such a wide arsenal of, I would call them nutrient-dense meals that are delicious and crowd-pleasing for the entire family, whether you have a one-year-old or like a super picky eater who is older, and everyone in between. And I love how you show us how to easily incorporate international spices and herbs and meats and flavors, because I love to travel and I'm such a foodie, but in a very approachable way, things that you can get at Costco or Publix GreenWise section. And yeah, sometimes ordering online, but just making it really approachable. Yeah. So I know I went down a rabbit hole, but one other big thing I need to mention for your listeners. A big mistake I made the first time. And again, because I thought I had enough insights into fertility, I realize now I really didn't. I'm so embarrassed to admit this because I know I should know better. And I even read the book Taking Charge of Your Fertility at the time. I was only relying primarily on those cheapy from the drugstore ovulation predictor kit strips. And I learned from you, some women do have multiple LH surges. And those strips, it's the word is in the name. They predict, they do not confirm ovulation. It is quite possible that I unnecessarily elongated my conception time because maybe we weren't really trying when I was actually fertile and I wasn't confirming ovulation. So I started using tools that I learned about from your program, such as Temp Drop for the purpose of tracking my BBT, and also Enido, or basal body temperature, and Enido to not just predict ovulation, but to confirm it, because we know ovulation is like the fifth vital sign. That is a symptom of how healthy you are overall.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up. That was something that was I hadn't actually considered the possibility that was what lengthened your conception time in your first go around. But especially after we had been diving deep into different areas of just like lab work and things like that, and really getting into some of the more objective measurements, right? I like to look at fertility in different, like you said, different layers, right? And one of the first areas that I think is foundational baseline, everybody needs to be focusing on it, is looking at fertility awareness signs, right? All of our fertile signs. And you can learn so much through tracking your basal body temperature and things like that. And that was one of the things that, especially paired with tracking your LH through using the Enido, or even if you're doing ovulation test strips, it's not super indicative that you're going to be ovulating. It's only a measurement of the possibility that you're going to be ovulating soon. And so for people who are unfamiliar with LH, LH is luteinizing hormone, and it's one of the hormones that paired with estrogen helps to trigger ovulation. And for some people, I would say most often it's in women who have PCOS or have the constellation of symptoms of PCOS, if you're not into going to get a diagnosis or things like that. And what happens often is that women can have multiple LH surges in their cycle. So their LH might go up and look like you're going to ovulate, right? An ovulation test kit will tell you like, oh, ovulation is going to be soon. And so then you might, like, if you're trying to conceive, you might start trying to conceive during that time, which great if you just want to be intimate with your partner. But if you're really trying to conceive, you want to confirm that you've ovulated. And if you didn't ovulate, then continuing to test your LH and then continuing to test your or confirm your ovulation by testing your basal body temperature, for example, would help to give you a good idea of whether you did truly ovulate and if you are actually needing to still try to conceive.
Yes. And there's one thing I don't think I added before that's really important. It's right, because it's the accumulation of all the small micro actions that we do consistently is at least from my experience, what I realized had the biggest impact on me being able to get pregnant on the first shot this time around. Huge difference from last time. I'm embarrassed to admit again, because I'm a self-proclaimed crunchy mom, or 80-20 crunchy, that it wasn't until your program that I started even understanding the purpose of red light glasses or blue light blockers. So I talked about the importance of getting more sleep, having better sleep hygiene, but I had a nasty scrolling habit, just the doom scrolling, just mindless. The algorithms get me. What can I say? I've been influenced.
I'm not immune to it.
I'm only human. And I was really doing myself a disservice by bringing my phone into the bedroom. I know, so bad, guys. Don't judge me. I don't do it anymore. Now I leave my phone outside of the bedroom. I swear, this is nuts in the year 2024, but sometimes I actually stop even looking at my phone once it's dinner time, and I don't look at it again until after breakfast the next day, maybe a few times a week. Started putting on airplane mode, but the biggest thing was because, honestly, it is nice to connect and just turn off my brain and watch an episode of something with my husband once our son goes down to sleep. But the difference is I will wear the blue light blockers this time. And I know you can speak to all the hormonal benefits of that, but I really do think that made a difference with my egg quality.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times when people look to habits like wearing blue light blocking glasses, sometimes people think that's a step too far. That's excessive. Yeah.
And you're a conspiracy theorist.
or even just considering the fact that they might say, oh, I don't have trouble sleeping. That was originally when I first started using blue light blockers back in 2011, 2012. Yeah, before it was like super, super popular. And my husband and I think we were dating at the time, but we had started wearing blue light blockers. And it was one of those things where people would be like, oh, are you struggling with your sleep? Do you have insomnia or something? I'd be like, no, but I'm just trying to optimize my life. And that was one of the things, right? I think it's hard to really pinpoint exactly what was the one change that made all of the difference, right? Like you're saying, it's a bunch of micro changes, right? Micro habits that they add up, right? And the way I describe this in my course, Resilient Motherhood, is I have this visual of different buckets, and everybody has a different sized bucket. And the more you add to each of those buckets, like some people, they have a huge bucket and they can handle having the occasional alcoholic drink. Some people can handle having late nights multiple times a week or whatever, right? List the stressor, list the bad habit, for example. And there's always going to be people who are like, but I got pregnant doing this or whatever. And there's always going to be people who have a smaller bucket, right? A lower tolerance threshold, if you want to look at it that way. And I am one of those people who has a lower tolerance threshold, right? Like my fertility was horrible when I was vegetarian and I was exposed to blue light. And there's all of these different things that happen. What I didn't do was I never drank. I never smoked. There was so many like good habits on the outside of why people are like, oh, you're healthy. And that was one of the reasons why it was so hard for me to really pinpoint what was going on in my health, was because externally, like when I would go to see a doctor, they'd be like, oh, like you're young, you're healthy, you're lean, you don't smoke, you don't drink, you don't do whatever. And then it was dismissed. And so what I want to raise awareness around is that it doesn't matter specifically what the bad habit is. If it's too much for your body, then your body's going to communicate to you and let you know that it's too much. And so our job, if we're trying to figure out like how do we most optimize our fertility, our job is figuring out which of those habits do we need to go without and how much of those are like playing a bigger role and which one of those are like essentially filling up our bucket completely. And so that's coming back to the different, oh shoot, I like just lost my train of thought.
Micro habits, buckets. You throw some keywords at you.
I went down a rabbit hole there. Coming back to something.
But well, the big picture was it was hard to pinpoint exactly what it was this time. It was all the micro actions.
Yeah. And the sleep. And oh, there was something about blue light blocking glasses that I wanted to mention.
Okay.
So coming back to blue light blocking glasses, that is one of the things that you can start incorporating whether or not you have problems sleeping, and you will see direct influences on your egg quality and your fertility. And part of the reason why that works is because it communicates to your brain daylight and lack of daylight, right? If you're getting blue light exposure to your brain, that's essentially communicating to your body, hey, it's daytime, let's produce more cortisol, which is antagonistic to melatonin. And melatonin is like one of the most potent antioxidants in your body that's responsible for preserving and really restoring egg quality. And so one of the probably the most basic habits that I really encourage and I place a big emphasis on with my clients is sleep. And like you said, there was a little bit of a heart-to-heart, and I like to be frank, but gentle.
And you're so good at striking that balance.
Really asking people to reflect on, okay, is this truly serving you? And how can we nudge your body in the right direction, right? And that's something that part of me, especially with sleep, like part of me was like, I need to have circadian signaling, sleep, all of those things. I need to have it like first thing in my course, because that's bottom line what everybody needs to do. But then I was like, oh, but this other thing is really important too. I want people to start tracking their fertility signs. And so that was actually, I had the fertility awareness modules coming first because I want people to start getting their baseline foundation. And sometimes it takes a couple of cycles to start seeing patterns. And so It was definitely, it's hard to really pinpoint, like, okay, what is the most important thing? And it's not that one is more important than the other. It's that they all have to coexist within one overall preconception journey. So being a nutritionist, I will tell you that nutrition is not the only important part of supporting a healthy preconception journey. It's a huge part of it, right? But there are other huge parts of it too.
100%. And that was one of the biggest revelations for me in this process, because you always hear, eat more zinc and selenium, oysters and Brazil nuts. And it's okay, that is nutrition 101. Anise is going to take it to a whole new level over here.
Oh, yeah. And okay, so what was your kind of going into the course a little bit? What was your experience going through the course? What were some of your biggest takeaways? I know you've touched on some of them, but in terms of overall education and things that you didn't know before, any other things that you really pulled away from that?
Yes. Okay. So I actually have it up because there's so many mind-blowing takeaways that it's like, where do I even begin? But let me just call out a few that stood out. Lab testing to consider. First of all, in terms of the course itself, like I said before, I love how it's self-paced, video, audio. It's really easy to listen to and watch wherever you are at whatever time of day. Now, in terms of the content, that lab testing to consider, what I love that you did was lab testing, not just for the woman, but we know fertility is a two-way street. It takes you to tango. Lab testing for your male partner. That was so cool. And what, not just the what, but the why. It was so easy to order through you. A couple of the lab tests that I did were the Dutch test. And I love that you don't just share insights, because that's wonderful to know the insights. What are the takeaways? You share what to do next in layman's terms, because a lot of the times these labs are difficult to interpret. Doing the full thyroid panel to see, were my low BBTs a result of PCOS? But it did turn out that it was all within normal range, so we looked to other solutions. Okay, so other things that I totally did not consider in the world of fertility, and I never thought this stuff really applied to me, balancing blood sugar. I just always thought of, when it comes to nutrition, there are certain key micronutrients that men and women should be consuming, ideally from whole foods, to improve your egg and sperm quality and chances of conceiving. I totally didn't even consider balancing blood sugar. And admittedly, I'm a sourdough girl. I do. Now, while I don't do candy, I don't do soda, I don't do any of that stuff. I do appreciate a pastry here and there from a very high quality bakery. And I do like to bake. That was a sort of tough pill to swallow. But at the same time, what I realized is from the recipes, that was another not only invaluable aspect of resilient motherhood, the access to this arsenal of recipes, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack. You can make them in under an hour. So easy, delicious, filling. But what I realized is when you're cooking with the foods that you recommend in resilient motherhood, you actually lose all those cravings for the breads and the pastries and the refined carbs. And it's so much easier to balance your blood sugar. Another thing that I loved was learning about detoxification. too often, maybe not nowadays because of all the, if you're in this niche in Instagram, you see all the other ways to detoxify, but I never, ever considered the importance of detoxification as it relates to being able to get pregnant easily for men and for women and the role that the liver plays. Because going back to this whole idea of mainstream dietetics, I don't know how else to call it, woke nutrition. It's always just your liver, like the purpose of your liver is to detoxify. But it's okay, what about if your liver has like a really heavy load? And what about just all the toxins in our food and water and soil, right? And just lifestyle. Different ways to easily detoxify, whether it's like how to safely use a sauna in pregnancy, the importance of not just moving, because it's one thing to do like a slow flow in yoga, but like the purpose of sweating when you move and getting your heart rate up. And then what else? Gosh, so much, Anissa, just so much value here. But I also love moving into embodying the mother, this whole section in your program. We're not just thinking of the preconception period. I love how you took us ahead. The assumption is you will become a mother on this program. And once you are a mother, all the things you mentally and socially need to prepare yourself for in order to be the mother that you really want to be, the best mother for your children and not just check a box. That was huge.
I put that at the end of the course, but it, again, like everything else, it is not any less important, right? And I think so often when it comes to preparing for pregnancy, this mental preparation, that building that resilient mindset is such a critical part of the journey, right? Where there's so many things that we go through our day doing, and there's so much internal self-talk that we have, and the way we approach our daily habits can be life-changing if we are approaching them from the perspective of, this is going to make me a better mom, or this is going to prepare me for pregnancy, or for somebody who maybe isn't married yet, but they're trying to optimize their fertility for that time when they do meet the right person, this is going to help me embody that mother that my future husband, the person who I'm looking for, is going to be more attracted to and recognize, this is the kind of woman who I want to marry, who I want to be the mother of my children, right? For me, when I was meeting my husband for the first time, and really when I was going about dating throughout my whole teenage years and early 20s, actually, I think I met my husband when I was 20, so teenage years, I ended most of the relationships that I was in, like myself, right? I don't think I was ever really dumped. Mostly because it would be like, okay, 3 months in, this is not somebody I would want to marry, moving on. And like, I wouldn't allow myself to get too emotionally attached because I knew that was the end goal. And so I didn't want emotions to blind me to seeing that. And I had several boyfriends who told me like, that's not the right way to go about dating. You're not going to find this like perfect man who you're looking for, which I did. And I've been married to him for more than 11 years. I think 12 years. I'm losing track.
Thank goodness you didn't take their advice.
And it's just one of those things that I think the more you can find your true self, find the true person who you were designed to be and live most in alignment with that person. If you want to be a mother, finding who you want to be as a mother and embodying that person will, again, help you to find the right person and attract the right kind of father. And that was one of the things where, like, when I met my husband, I knew instantly, right? Like, within the first week, we both told each other we want to get married. That was totally, and again, not like blinded by emotion, but it was like, he was the first person was like, oh, I could actually see myself like having sex with this person, because if the possible, like I wasn't tracking my cycles at that point, but if the possibility were to happen, if I were to get pregnant, I would be thrilled to have him be the father of my children, right?
I love
that. And that's one of the things, I addressed this in another podcast episode about like how to attract your future husband kind of thing. But that was one of the things that like for me has to be a requirement for the person who I'm going to have sex with. Yeah. And we still waited until we were married, but it was one of those things that it has to be either hell yes or hell no.
Yeah, there really is no settling.
Yeah. And I think, so coming back to like embodying that person, I hadn't spent much time on Instagram this morning other than to, I posted a couple stories and like one post from Evie magazine had popped up and it was like a headline that said something along the lines of, what should I do if my boyfriend is not okay with me staying home as a stay-at-home mom or something like that. It was like something, headlines along that line.
Feminism.
And so it was one of those things that like, for me, that would be a red flag. I honestly didn't read the post. I didn't go to their blog or whatever and read it. But like, for me, that would be a huge red flag because we have to know what we want in motherhood. We have to know if our partner is going to be supportive of that. And where are you willing to compromise? And I think maybe coming to that area of compromise for you and your partner, what were some of the things that you felt you had to, or that he or you had to compromise on and areas of improvement that they were willing to make?
Are you talking about for preconception or marriage or?
Yeah, preconception.
Okay, so like we discussed before, preconception is a two-way street. It takes the man and the woman to make these compromises. I will say, I will give it to my husband. He was already great on the movement and he naturally loves to run. And that's just like his outlet. He also is doing soccer regularly. He's a great soccer player. The detoxification part and the movement piece was there. And then in terms of changes that he needed to make, which I brought to his attention so he could hopefully come to the conclusion on his own, which he did, it was never the quantity of alcohol, like in any one serving, that was a concern ever at all, but it was the frequency, right? So there's quantity or frequency or both. And there was a nightly beer, you know, ritual or habit where it's like a long day of work, sometimes a stressful day. You want to unwind, you go for the beer. I will also say he's European. And it's very normalized, especially in Scandinavia, to reach for the beer. And it's definitely not stigmatized at all. It's a little bit of a mindset shift and just explaining we're both going to be making positive changes, not just me. He totally understood that. And I didn't even plant the seed in his head, but I was really glad to see that on his own volition, he decided to swap out the nightly beer for an orange Olipop. So ladies out there, if you have, you know, a husband who is reaching for that beer, just swap it for an orange Olipop. It has to be orange. Why? It was his favorite flavor. But again, these changes don't, like, yeah, they, some of them should be black and white. They don't have to be to see good results. Like even just going from a beer 7 nights per week to just 1 to 2 nights per week, that can have a really positive impact. And also me encouraging him, hey, I know we have this thing where we want to watch Netflix or a movie every night and then crash at midnight. Why don't we try just bumping up that bedtime by 30 minutes each night and see for fun how early we can go to sleep? And so he's, okay, maybe we read instead. And he's also offered that too. Hey, let's read a book instead. And it's, yeah, you're right. We have a massive library. Why are the books just decorations?
Yeah. And I think that, again, that speaks to the overall bucket load, right? Of it doesn't have to be all or nothing. Sometimes it is better for it to be all or nothing for certain people, depending on the way they have their habits, right? The addictive capacity of their habits. But again, watching Netflix, for example, maybe every night, not a good idea, but 3 nights a week. And then having those, and then taking the right steps to mitigate the negative effects, right? Like wearing blue light blocking glasses, like keeping the lights low, whatever. Not watching stressful things like
totally
thrillers or whatever.
Yeah.
There's that. And then also reducing the overall frequency of it and going towards other options that are not only not doing the things that are like harming your body or like burning through your detox systems and your antioxidants and things like that, but then actively choosing things that are nourishing and restorative for your body. So some of the things I often will recommend are like doing some foam rolling together or doing some massage together or whatever, right? I think a lot of times, especially parents of young children, especially even just one child, they often find, oh, like we like don't have sex enough just for fun, or we're not intimate, or like I have low libido or whatever it is. Oftentimes it's okay, how much are you filling that time with just like non-essential I don't want to say mind-numbing activities, but I would say watching Netflix or something like that is, it's just trying to fill up your time, right? It's a space filler. And looking to those things, what's going to actually bring us more connection? What's going to make us healthier, both in our relationship and our marriage, but actively as people in our human bodies? Like, how do we restore from a long, stressful day, right?
Yes, it is so true. It's a mindset shift. It's also just like bodily habits and like little lifestyle changes here and there. And we all have the same 24 hours in a day. It's really just, how are we deciding to allocate that time and what excuses are we coming up with?
Yeah, totally. So for people who are listening now and they are in their preconception period, what advice would you give to them about like where you were at in wanting to work with me? Where maybe did you have any hesitations? How long did it take you to jump in and say, okay, I'm going to do this? And what advice would you have for them to get off of the fence in deciding, is this the right decision for them to jump into resilient motherhood and see what kind of support they can get?
Like I said, you piqued my interest from the moment we crossed paths on Instagram, and I was like peeking at your reels. I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Oh my God, that's such a good point. And checking out your website, what is resilient motherhood? The only hesitation I had before diving into the program, it actually wasn't even cost related or anything to that tune. It was, what if I end up taking this program and it ends up being just an overlap of things I already know, right? And that's where I was really humbled. I just want to emphasize, because I'm coming from a place of doing deep dive rabbit hole research on a wide array of topics that affect moms and babies. I have what I thought were the best fertility books out there, including Taking Charge of Your Fertility, which is still a great book, granted. But there was so many insights that I found in your program that I had never even heard of before. I had no idea could have such a great impact on my fertility. And also the husband's role in this, that there's absolutely no question in my mind, if you are on the fence and you're listening out there, you're just like, I don't know the next step to take. I know I want to expand my family. What do I do? What's this preconception period? My best advice is just to go, like just to start the Resilient Motherhood program. There's no doubt in my mind that you're going to walk away saying, well, I really regretted completing that, or I learned nothing new. I promise you, you will learn new things. And just to offer some words of encouragement, try to enter this preconception period with a blank slate. I know it's hard. It's really easy when we bring stories from our first preconception period, or maybe things practitioners told us like, oh, you're, because you're this age, it'll take you this long. Or the first time you tried, it took you a year, it's going to take you even longer. I was mind blown. I still have to pinch myself to this day. And I'm in the middle of the second trimester here. I still am in shock that it took literally one time, the first time we tried in my cycle, to get pregnant. And another thing I wanted to add too is, I was really, a side note, but I was really paranoid, you know this, because I had a short luteal phase, not quite luteal phase defect, but it wasn't within the ideal 12 to 14 day range. It was actually about 10 days. And I was so worried, like, oh, does this mean I'll miscarry? And also I was spotting. But I think it was because I might have had some potentially benign ovarian cysts as my uterus was expanding. Maybe they were popping. So despite all those little things, like not all those little things, those two little things that came up, it was actually a result of your program that I actually was able to maintain such an overall level of ease and calm and confidence. And I think that's another amazing value point, is in the mainstream system, especially with fertility experts in the obstetric world, there's a lot of fears and doubts, and you need this pharmaceutical and that drug to get pregnant. What I love is like, there's none of that here. It's all relying on nature. And I can't tell you just how truly resilient your body really is. All that is to say, my advice to you is just take the leap, do the program. You won't regret it. You might shock yourself with just how quickly you can get pregnant. I joke with Anissa, I'm like, your program, okay, it worked a little too well, because I was anticipating this would be like a 6-month process of me getting pregnant. Here I am with a positive pregnancy test. It's a wonderful, happy surprise, but I did not expect it to be that fast.
Mm-hmm. And so now that you are pregnant, you said you're in your second trimester. How has it gone? You said that going through the program helped to get you through that initial part of knowing that you had a short luteal phase, you had some spotting, but you still were able to go through with some confidence. You weren't allowing yourself to totally spiral, and you had some good like mental discipline, right? To be able to go through early pregnancy and figure out, okay, this is what my body needs. Now that you're at that point, like you said, second trimester, how are you doing? How has it been going? What is maybe different than your last pregnancy? I'm curious to hear.
All right. So one of the biggest differences, two of the biggest differences is with my last pregnancy, I was relying in the first trimester. I was using the fatigue and the nausea as excuses to hide behind for why it was justifiable that I was snacking all day long, every day on pretzels and crackers. And I would tell myself things like, they're USDA organics. It's not sprayed with glyphosate. There's worse choices, but it's still refined carbs. It's pretzels and crackers. And it was a lot of too much of a good thing, like tons of apples, tons of oranges, just tons of sugars. And this is at the time, this was at the tail end of me being in the corporate space, having my high stress job, which was awful for female hormones. And I had a sedentary desk job, was working from home. And I also came up with all sorts of excuses, like not to move my body. Like, I'm too tired. I have too many meetings. I like wasn't even taking walks. So that's a big difference. This time around, your program really taught me the importance of not just the importance of maintaining physical activity and also eating those small but frequent blood sugar balancing meals, which, by the way, really helped with my nausea. But it's not just that it's, oh, this is a good idea. It's good for you and baby, and it'll alleviate your symptoms. It's more so, what's the risk if you don't incorporate those daily habits, right? And I'm not just talking about a physical risk, but you could have more pregnancy complications, maybe put on an undesirable amount of weight that makes moving even more uncomfortable and strenuous. It makes postpartum recovery that much more difficult, making being a resilient mom difficult, right? It's a whole domino effect. But a bombshell, I guess you could say, one of the biggest differences is I am having a wild pregnancy, and I'm actually not working with any licensed provider, no midwives, no medwives. But I am working with a birth keeper who you helped me source, thank you so much, through the Free Birth Society Radical Birth Keeper School. She's on the opposite coast of Florida, but we've already met in person. We went blueberry picking at a random middle of nowhere farm in the middle of Florida. And so I won't technically be having a free birth, which would mean I'm like birthing totally solo or just with my husband, but I'm having a sovereign birth. So just having a wise woman there just for sisterhood and company, extra company, but intentionally someone who's not bound to her license. So I know she's not going to put the state's laws before my and my baby's best interest. So yeah, no ultrasounds, nothing. The most technocratic thing I've done in this pregnancy is I took two digital pregnancy tests. I like to just take two for extra reassurance, and that's it. But like, I'm literally not doing a single scan, not even the anatomy scan. I haven't seen any provider, and I feel absolutely incredible.
And so what would you say, because a lot of times people will look at working with a private provider as prenatal care. What is your prenatal care right now?
Yeah. First, let's define what is that primary care provider, that licensed provider doing. They're taking your weight, right? They're going to look at your blood pressure, your vital signs. They'll probably ask you the same questions at every single appointment if you're in the OB space. Sure, it'll be longer, a little bit better if you're like with a home birth midwife, but cool, you get your fundal height. They talk about nutrition. What am I going to take away from those appointments that I wouldn't learn in an intense childbirth education course or just from my own research? Or working with you, I've learned more than with any other licensed provider. The difference is with my prenatal care, the only thing I'm doing that's with someone who's licensed is I am getting regular chiropractic adjustments from like a Webster certified chiropractor, which is great for pregnancy. That's the only thing I'm doing. And then when you work with a radical birth keeper, like the one I'm working with, we do these really in-depth, long connection sessions. Think 2 hours long video call since we're a few hours apart via car. And because I had a C-section with my first birth that was not planned, I was a home birth transport, going to be doing a lot of birth processing, birth trauma unpacking, which also includes some of the tough questions, which I was more than happy to embrace, such as what role did I play in co-creating the birth experience, right? These are questions that can be uncomfortable that no mom wants to admit, was I doing something that co-created this? And these are simply not conversations that you would ever encounter with a mainstream licensed practitioner. They don't have the time for that. Insurance doesn't cover it.
Yeah. And I think these conversations, they can be so enlightening, but only if you look beyond the shaming and the blaming and the guilt tripping, right? Because that's not the role of exploring these questions, right? The role is to help you be able to make better choices the next time and to integrate your birth story and learn from your experiences, right? I'm a big proponent of looking at your struggles and looking at the challenges that you're experiencing and say, what is here for me? How can I learn from this?
Yes.
All of that where there's, if you stop at, I had a traumatic birth, let's hope for a better birth the next time, or I had a traumatic conception journey, let's hope for a better conception journey the next time, without actively digging into the why, like why did it happen that way? And like, what can I learn from this? Then I think we're missing so many opportunities for learning.
Yes, as they say, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. It's simply not enough to have good intentions. You need to put in the work. And absolutely, I want to clarify, going back to your point, this isn't about, I'm going to shift and place all the blame on myself. No, because it's more of the, you know what, I'm going to see what ultimately did I consent to, or like, how did I go down this path? In addition to, what are the ways that my midwives helped sabotage the home birth that I wanted? One little interesting thing to note too, just as a side note, this might be relevant to some listeners, because the birth keeper I found, she's so awesome, by the way, she knows yoga, like she's a yoga instructor, Reiki. She actually made me a customized guided meditation that I've been doing 4 times a week. And so in addition to that, because she's been in the system for a decade and she understands how to interpret all sorts of medical labs and she's working on getting out of that system, I actually went on to my hospital, the website where I delivered my son, and I requested for free my medical records. All right. So this is interesting. I'll do a future podcast episode on a deep dive. But the big picture is I was carrying around this false narrative given to me by my provider, probably to justify an unnecessary C-section due to a failed induction, that due to my hypertension, which wasn't actually hypertension, we learned, resulted in preeclampsia. We're looking at all the levels in my labs. It's like 800 pages of documents, by the way. And there's not a single level in there that indicated, along with blood pressure readings, that I actually, that fell within the preeclampsia diagnosis. It was a false diagnosis. Here I was carrying around for the last 2 years thinking like, I'm prone to hypertension. The thing is, you could end up with a false diagnosis. Somehow OBs can get away with this. It's really nice to work with someone who's been in both worlds, the mainstream obstetric medical paradigm and the radical unlicensed birthkeeper space, to help give me that clarity and that closure that I never had before, too.
Wow. That's,
yeah.
I like to think that people go into medicine wanting to help people. But I get really, it just like really gets under my skin when I hear people really just lacking integrity and being blatantly dishonest. So I'm sorry that was your experience. And
thank you.
I'm thankful that you have grown from that and found a much better alternative that feels right for your overall journey, your pregnancy journey. And so part of your prenatal care has been connecting with a wise woman who is able to help you dig deep into the mental blocks around this and going into birth.
Yeah.
How else have you been taking care of yourself during this time?
It's really just a continuation of what I've learned from your program, right? Because despite the fact that the program is Resilient Motherhood, it's designed to help you conceive in the most natural and holistic way. Why stop there, right? So I thought to myself, yeah, sure. Okay, so the program technically ended since it did its job and I conceived. But I'm still taking all those recipes I got. You better believe I'm still using those recipes. I'm never going to stop circulating them. And it doesn't mean that we just revert to our old habits, right? Because one of the biggest mistakes I made the first time around was I got so freaked out. Oh my gosh, now I'm pregnant. This is great. So I'm just going to be uber cautious. And I stopped CrossFit altogether. I was like, I don't want to risk anything. Like, what if I get injured? This could be bad. That's something I should have continued with. So I'm taking what I learned from that mistake and I'm applying it to all aspects. Resilient motherhood through pregnancy and into motherhood. This is a lifestyle. This is not a...
Exactly. That's great to hear. And I do think that it is so common for women to stop their healthy habits, right? They stop exercising. They stop using the sauna. They give themselves a little more allowance to have, like you said, some baked treats or just eating for two or whatever, however people say it. You don't actually need to eat for two. You just need to eat nutrient-dense foods and enough of them. But yeah, so one other question that I just wanted to get into before we wrap up is you were breastfeeding your toddler going into this process. And where are you at with that now? Are you still nursing? Did you wean him? How is that going?
Okay, so great question. He's a couple of weeks away from being 21 months old, right? So at the end of July, he will be two. And our current cadence, we've been stagnating for the last few weeks at this sort of routine, which is first thing in the morning, last thing before bed. So I've been nursing him at least two times a day. We dropped all like middle of the day feedings a few weeks ago. It's been going really well, like no pushback whatsoever there. I honestly don't even know if I have any milk left in me. It might just be like suckling for comfort at this point, which is fine, whatever. And then sometimes he actually is sleeping through the night, which is great for him, like 6 to 7 hours. But when he's not, and if it's just the first stretch could be 3 to 5 hours, like the only way right now he's going back to bed is with the boob. So max three times in a 24-hour period. Minimum two times. And I'll just say this, I absolutely loved my breastfeeding journey. I'm also so grateful due to my like traumatic unplanned C-section birth that I exclusively breastfed, never supplemented. I'm like very happy and overcame any early obstacles with an IBCLC. So can't recommend it enough. I did think before I got pregnant, I was going to be one of those moms who like breastfed till my kid was 3 or 4. And so much respect to you and the other moms who do that. But I realized for me that desire dropped. I don't know if it was physiologically, maybe from the hormone, this dropped as I became pregnant. And I just wanted a little break, a little respite between baby one and baby two. Weaning super, super slowly, super gently. My goal would be like my son would be okay with us being wrapped up by his second birthday, and this would give me a couple months break before baby two comes. And then I can say, I got my 2 years in.
Yeah, you're going to win that reward. Yeah, and with breastfeeding, like I just actually, as we're recording this, I just published my breastfeeding episode where I reflected on the 6 years of breastfeeding that I did. And in that episode, I share just how different it can be, the weaning experience and what you're going to want, right? I definitely was like, there was an appeal to me to do tandem nursing where you're nursing a baby and nursing a toddler. I was like, oh, wow, those moms are so badass. And right. Once I was pregnant and nursing my toddler, my nipples were just like very sensitive. And I was immediately averse to breastfeeding. As soon as he would like latch on after a minute of nursing, I'm like, okay, get off. Like, you have to get off. Yeah. I think probably up until about half my pregnancy, he had been nursing. And then at that point, it was just completely empty. And I remember he started nursing one time. He's, mom, it's empty.
That's so cute. And so I was wondering if that would ever happen with my son, because I'm like, I am like 99% sure there's nothing in there anymore, like as of a couple weeks ago, but he still will come back for more. I'm like, are you getting one sip? What's going on here?
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the interesting things, if for some people who maybe you get pregnant and you're still nursing a much smaller baby, less than a year old or something like that, don't normally recommend that from a like child spacing perspective and just optimizing mama's nutrient replenishment, but sometimes things happen. I do know several people where this has happened, and I think it's a testament to nature's wisdom that if you have a nursing baby who is dependent on milk, on breast milk for their nourishment, even if you're pregnant, your body will continue to produce milk for that baby. And that has been a really just fascinating thing that I've noticed, is that of the people who I know who have nursed very young babies while pregnant, they have been able to fully sustain their baby from their breast milk even while pregnant. And so sometimes when milk supply dwindles during pregnancy, part of me wonders if it's like nature's way of saying, hey, they're not fully dependent on this for nourishment. It's okay to rely more on food, type of thing. But that's my own interpretation of nature's communication.
That makes so much sense, because I hadn't thought of that angle. I was thinking like, oh, if the mom herself is depleted and doing the bare minimum to take care of her diet, then she's not going to have enough milk for the current baby. But could it be that and what you said, potentially?
Yeah. The people who I know where they continued to have enough milk, they were properly nourishing themselves throughout throughout their pregnancy. Yeah. So they did have more, enough to share.
the like-minded ladies.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is, I'm so thankful to have this conversation with you, to hear about your experience. I'm just thrilled that your second experience has been opposite of what your prior experience was. And I think it's such a testament to say that even though you have healthy habits going into pregnancy, like you did in your first one, right? You generally ate really well. You worked out, right? Like you were generally, based on most people's definition, you were generally healthy. And I think this is what oftentimes one of the biggest misconceptions when it comes to preconception preparation, is that people say, I'm only going to prepare for conception if I have problems, or if I don't have good fertility, or if I don't have normal hormones, or whatever, right? Whatever the excuse you want to place it on, what I would say is that preparing for conception will benefit every couple who is planning to have a baby in so many different ways, right?
Yes.
Whether it's that conception journey, whether it's the pregnancy experience, whether it's breastfeeding and experiencing a healthy, blissful postpartum, really everything starts at the beginning. And I love that you have gifted yourself this journey, right? And are gifting your next baby with that.
Thank you. Thank you for gifting me with your program.
I'm thankful to be here for you and thankful to have met you. And yeah, it's really such a fulfilling job to have, where I can use both my own personal experience and what I know to be true about working with women and their hormones and fertility, and to really make a big change in people's lives that, you know, if you could go through like your first pregnancy experience having it be optimal, then that's the ideal, right? What I don't want is for everybody to have an experience that they hated, or not that they hated it, but an experience that they want to do totally differently. Like, I wanted, when I was going into pregnancy, I wanted to be that person who was like, I loved my first experience. I wanted to do everything the way that I wanted to the first time. I actually have a podcast episode titled Your First Pregnancy is Not a Trial Run.
It's
and I get
true.
Into that, but
it's so true, because you know what? It's, yes, some lessons in life must be learned the hard way, but actually it shouldn't have to be that way, because if you have the information, you haven't been pregnant yet, just do it the right way the first time, and this program is going to set you up for success.
And I think relying on wisdom gained through other people's experience is such an underrated way of learning, right? So many people are like, oh, I have to go through this myself. And yeah, learning through your own experience is going to be valuable in its own way, but so much of learning can happen through other people's mistakes. And no, my hope
is set the precedent.
My hope is to share, okay, how can we avoid making those mistakes that other people have experienced and have seen the consequences of them?
Yes. And I just want to add one last thing. I never thought I'd be one of those women who could confidently say, wow, my pregnancy's a breeze. Things are going great. But because I didn't have that experience the first time, there was always some sort of symptom or issue or something getting in the way of me really enjoying it. And this time around, it's just truly blissful. Mm. So thank you for that.
Of course. And so I would love if we could just wrap up with you sharing a little bit about where people can find you and learn more about your podcast and all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So check us out on Instagram. You can follow us at Moms Off the Record Pod, P-O-D. You can also find us on any podcast platform, including Apple, Spotify, and many others. Our podcast is Moms Off the Record. And you can also check out our website. We have various offerings, including all sorts of ebooks on some of your favorite topics. And that is momsofftherecordpod.com. And then you can shoot us an email. I'm sure you know what I'm going to say. momsofftherecordpod@gmail.com.
All right. Moms Off the Record Pod is the place to find you on all platforms. And yeah, you and April are just so fun to listen to on the podcast. And I loved your raw honesty. And I think it's important for women on this journey of motherhood to find other women who they vibe with. And even if it's not in person, I would say ideally, like in person is going to be beneficial in so many other ways as well. But at least finding people who, you know, especially if you're engaging with social media on a regular basis, or if you're listening to podcasts on a regular basis, to have people who you align with values and want to learn more from, other moms who are going through this journey with you or right before you. There's so much to learn from what you guys are sharing on there. So thank you for taking the time to do that. I know it is a balance to sacrifice your sleep, to sacrifice nap times, where sometimes it's like, oh, I should really be napping right now. But I know you're learning how to balance that, and you're great at finding how to continue to be supportive of other women's growth through your podcast and the work that you do through Thank the you. Podcast while also taking care of yourself. So keep at it. It's a balance, but I know you're doing it.
Thank you so much, Anissa. I just had such a blast chatting with you, and thank you for having me on.
Of course. Take care. And now it's your turn. Restore your fertility, conceive naturally with confidence, and grow your healthy baby. If you want to learn more about how you can support your fertility, check out my free masterclass, Unlock Your Fertility, How to Transform Your Habits for Optimal Pregnancy Success. And if you're ready to have my step-by-step strategy for how to personalize your own preconception protocol so you can conceive your dream baby on your own timeline, it's time for you to join me in Resilient Motherhood. Click the link in the show notes to join. I hope to see you there. Thank you so much for listening today. I really do appreciate you choosing to spend this time with me. If you gained value from today's episode, I'd love if you can act in reciprocity and share this episode with a friend. Screenshot your favorite part to share on your social media, tagging me at Anissa Woodall Nutrition, and leave a review in Apple Podcasts. This serves me to expand my reach of connecting with women who need this medicine. I'll see you on the next one. I hope you already know, but for legal purposes, I need to share that this podcast is for general informational and educational purposes only and does not constitute the giving of medical advice. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast are at the user's own risk. Each user is responsible for making their own decisions when it comes to their reproductive health. Remember, you are always the sole authority over your health, and if your case requires medical attention, use your own discretion to ensure that your needs are met. Thank you for listening.